Lunch with Aaron, Polly, Wayne, and Andrew. I'm Aaron.
This is Paul.
This is Wayne.
And I am Andrew.
Howdy, guys. Howdy.
Woo. Good morning.
Yeah.
Well, you know, we started our morning, on an unexpected surprise.
Yeah, way too early this morning, I get a message from Paul in our group chat, and he's just
I thought about not starting your day with profanity, but I went with it anyway.
I feel the choice.
Oh, go ahead. Did you start the day with a policeman at the door? Because that's how the weekend started at my house.
Oh.
What did you do,
Aaron?
Well, last night, I wasn't even home, but the police showed up at the door, and the wife answered the door, and they were serving a warrant to the guy that lives behind me, and they were concerned that when they served said warrant that he might hop the fence, and they'd like to stand in our backyard while the warrant was being served. And, you know, Suzanne's like, yeah, go ahead. And, you know, everything, it all ended peacefully, I assume. He did not flee the warrant. But, you know, I'm like, wow, I'm surprised you opened the door with the cops so you didn't barricade it, you know.
Is this the house that you wanted me to buy?
Uh-huh, yeah. So and it may be available again soon. It's not the murder house down the street, but it is house behind me.
Murder house would be a little cheaper, but we don't know what your neighbor did.
Yeah, I have no idea. There could be a body in the house. You never know. Yeah.
Oh, goodness. No.
Go ahead, Paul. Tell us your shocking news this morning.
Well, I started the day more pleasantly than with the police. I woke up and I look at Twitter. I'm like, why is Godzilla Minus One trending randomly on a Saturday? And it's because overnight Netflix released Godzilla Minus One to their streaming platforms, which I was unaware was going to happen. Maybe I shouldn't have been surprised, and it was already out there in the ether.
It was not. I mean, I've been searching Godzilla Minus One every week for the last 2 months, and there's been no news about when it was going to drop.
Yeah. And dear listener, search for it on Netflix, because if you're looking for it by a picture of Godzilla, you're not going to find it.
That's right.
The thumbnail is literally like a woman and a child sitting at a desk reading.
When you posted it, Paul, I actually had a moment of thought of, can I watch it before we record this morning? And then I'm like, no, I'm going back to bed.
I started it, but I'm just a few minutes in.
That is very exciting. I'm a little disappointed it's just the regular edition and not the black and white one.
Right.
But I'll
take what I can get right now. And you know, it's great that it's, you know, included within my Netflix subscription. I'm baffled that they did not offer it as a digital purchase before this.
Right. Yeah.
Seems like a lot of money they're leaving on the table.
I'm going to guess this is all because Netflix paid an ass bag of money. Because
I know that there is an agreement in the rights for Godzilla that they can't have a Japanese production and an American production in theaters at the same time. And I wonder if there's something about the digital distribution along those lines as well. I don't know. I'm real curious as to why that happened. But and I didn't look this morning, but as of earlier this week, there was nothing yet on the Blu-ray.
No, and it is available for purchase digitally. If you don't have Netflix, you can purchase it digitally. I'm looking at it on Apple right now. It's $6 to rent or $15 to purchase.
But no additional options with it, right? Like,
yeah, I'm looking at it. It doesn't say anything about special features, which for me, I'm not going to pay for it until I can get both editions.
Yeah,
because you know that's coming.
So it's weird. It's weird the way they have released this. But I'm thrilled that I'm going to get to watch Godzilla Minus One tonight. So
for no additional cost to
that's
you.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what you're already paying. Yeah.
Yep.
No, that's great. I can't wait to hear your thoughts on it, because as we've waxed on about it, I loved it. It was great.
Yeah. Well, I'm looking forward to it. So very exciting. Thank you for sharing that information. It's the first time Paul's ever shared good information.
This is probably true. I was like, I hesitated because it was so early. I think it was like 6 something in the morning. And I know you guys are an hour behind me. And I'm like, fuck it. they need to know.
They need to know that. Wake them up now.
It can't wait.
Be the one that gives them this news. It cannot wait.
Cannot wait. No.
But anyway, I'm excited that you guys are going to be able to see it because it's so good.
Well, I went and saw a new movie last night. Which
would you see?
I went to go see Furiosa.
That's the new Mad Max film.
Yeah. So did you see Mad Max Fury Road? Anybody else? Paul?
I did not actually see Fury Road. I had intended to. You know, it's one of those things that, like, if I don't much like many geeks, like, if I just happen to not get a chance to see something, all of a sudden I become anti-seeing that thing. So it's like I missed it in the theaters, and now I'm just like, I'm not going to see that movie for no real reason. Like, I like Mad Max, but now that it's so critically acclaimed, I'm like, fuck that movie.
Well, you know, Fury Road came out 9 years ago, and as you said, there was a lot of buzz about it at the time. I went and saw it. It was okay. I had some problems with it, but there were some good parts. It was a little above that. It was a B. I'll give it a B rating.
Did you say this 9 years ago?
Furiosa, yes. It was 2015.
Okay.
Yeah, time flies.
Yeah.
So, you know, I gave Fury Road a B. It was worth my time, but it wasn't. I didn't think it was as great as a lot of the praise it was getting at the time. So Furiosa came out, and honestly, I wasn't really planning to go see it in the theater because I was, you know, I figured I'd catch on streaming down the road a ways. And then a friend texted me last night as I was sitting right after work and was like, hey, I'm going to go see Furiosa. Want to join me? I was like, sure. So went, caught the 7:50 showing. And I got to say, I like Furiosa, which is, I guess I should explain. Furiosa is like the prequel to Fury Road. So there's a character in Choose of Fury Road called Furiosa, played by Charlize Theron, and starts with her towards the end of kind of this story arc. So we flash back to her as a child in Furiosa, and it kind of takes us up to right before where Fury Road starts. And I gotta say, I liked it a lot more than Fury Road. It was a lot more character development. There was great action. It was a better balance of action and you know, interaction, dialogue, story in this most recent installment. So if you liked Fury Road, I would definitely see Furiosa. If you thought Fury Road was mediocre, you still might like Furiosa. So
yeah. See, I saw the trailer for it very first time when I went to Planet of the Apes, which was like only a week or so before the movie came out. I knew nothing about this before it was almost in theaters. And I watched the trailer and I'm like, this looks terrible.
No, it was pretty good. I would almost tell you, though, to watch Furiosa first. If you're one of those people like Aaron and Paul and Wayne who have never seen Fury Road, I would go and watch Furiosa first. And then if you like it, go watch Fury Road.
You know, the reason why I never saw Fury Road was I like Mad Max and I like The Road Warrior, but I don't love them. And it's just like, I don't need to see that.
Did you love Thunderdome?
I do like Thunderdome, you know.
I think it's my favorite of the original three.
I think it's the Tina Turner performance that I enjoy so much in that movie.
It's Tina Turner and it's Master Blaster. Like,
Master Blaster.
Two ends of the spectrum there.
Yeah, those were just movies I did not need to have remade.
Yeah. Well, Fury Road's not a remake, though.
No,
is it?
It's a brand new installment. Yeah. That progresses the story along.
I went and saw a movie that I originally thought, when it was first pitched, that there's no way I was going to see this and that I couldn't believe that they were making it. But I went and saw The Fall Guy. You know, which of course is a reimagining of the 80s television show with Lee Majors, The Fall Guy. Yeah. And I was never a big The Fall Guy fan. I watched it every now and again, but it wasn't like, you know, must-see TV for me. But I gotta tell you, this movie was a lot of fun. Practical effects all the way through it. I mean, they really put the stuntmen to work on this thing. It was a hoot and a half. My only complaint about it is about 20 minutes too long. It's like 2 hours, 10 minutes. And so,
the important thing for me, Aaron, did they find a way to work in the theme song?
Yes.
Yeah. Nice.
And Lee Majors. So.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I really enjoyed this movie and cannot wait to watch it at home.
I used to enjoy the TV show. It was okay. Uh-huh. But the theme song I loved.
Yeah. No, it was so good. It was just super enjoyable. Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt are, you know, super charming and funny in the movie. It was great. I like the only complaint I had is that it needed an editor. But it was good. It was good. I highly recommend.
So. I'll have to check it out. We've been talking about what we're going to watch tonight. And I mentioned that as an option. There's a couple of films on like that have already dropped on streaming, like that one.
Yeah,
The First Omen is now there on streaming as well.
I saw that this morning. I saw that that was out there. Yeah.
Yeah. I want to see The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare.
Oh, yeah.
So there's a lot out there.
That's why I wanted to see in theaters and didn't get a chance to. I'm excited for that.
I don't think it was there very long. I mean, it feels like that one just came out, but I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah.
Agreed.
Well, but I can't tell you what you guys are going to watch tonight, but I will be watching Godzilla Minus One.
Oh, yeah. That is a requirement, Aaron.
Yes.
You have to.
Yeah. I'm a little disappointed you didn't watch it before the show. You had the time. Thanks to Paul's early notice.
Yeah.
And I know you were awake.
You know, when I was out there on Netflix looking at the Godzilla and it, you know, gave you the you may also be interested in, there was a Godzilla Singular Point, which is apparently an animated series from 2021 that Netflix made in conjunction with, you know, some Japanese outfit. But it's an anime about Godzilla. I didn't get much into it, but I was just like, huh, this looks interesting. And it's all Japanese with subtitles. But that looked kind of interesting to me.
Yeah, I noticed the other day when I was on there that they have a huge influx of anime in the last couple months.
I'm going to check it out after I check out Godzilla Minus One.
True.
Priorities. And of course, I got to watch it in advance of The Acolyte, you know, because once, you know, The Acolyte's dropping this week. So,
yeah, that's right.
And I have 2 hours of Star Wars The Acolyte.
Yeah. To make sure that you tune in to this podcast next week, because we'll be talking about The Acolyte episodes 1 and 2.
And most likely a very special Star Wars with Aaron and Polly, The Acolyte conversation.
Exactly. Nice. And whether or not we have those weekly will depend on if it's any good.
It's going to be great, Paul.
Yeah, Aaron. That's why we're talking about 5 episodes of Star Trek Discovery next time. Shit. Because it's so good.
Yeah, I can't wait to talk to you about that one, Paul.
Yeah. Make sure you subscribe to Star Trek with Aaron and Polly for that one.
Yeah, where we share our deep, deep love and appreciation for Star Trek Discovery. Jesus Christ.
For Star Trek Discovery being over. That's what we will share our deep appreciation.
I have never been more thankful for a show ending, I'll tell you.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but, spoilers. You know, TV shows, you know, it was announced this week that there is a 300 TV series reportedly in development with Zack Snyder in talks to be part of it and potentially directing it.
Cannot for the life of me imagine what that's going to be. I mean, are they just retelling the story of the 300, or is it, hey, these guys secretly survived, or is it another 300?
It is. So apparently there was already a plan for a sequel.
Well, they did make a sequel.
There was an actual sequel, but there was apparently Zack Snyder did have a plan for a sequel.
And I think that one, this sequel was titled 301.
301. But apparently this TV series would be a prequel because, you know, spoilers.
They all die.
They all die. Yeah.
I mean, you ask him and he's always got a plan for something.
Yeah, true. Maybe this is 299 will be the prequel name.
Yeah, 299.
I like it. I I think that's one of his best movies, right? The film he will be most known for in his life. So investing in a TV series, you know, with a maybe on Max or something like that. For what it's worth, as long as it's as good as the Spartacus TV series, which was inspired by 300.
I really like the Spartacus TV
series. Yeah. So I think it has potential.
Yeah. But, and that's what I was thinking of when you shared that, you know, that they were going to do a 300 series. I'm like, well, you know, I did like Spartacus. So,
yeah.
You know.
So. Well, Frank Miller's all over the news between 300 and there's a new Frank Miller documentary coming out.
Yeah. Yeah. Like One Night in Theaters coming up.
Frank Miller. I don't know that I'm up for that one.
You know, the Frank Miller documentary. I feel like I've done no research on this, but it feels like this is driven perhaps by Dan DiDio, that, you know, Dan DiDio and Frank Miller are working together now. since Dan left DC Comics, and I can't help but feel like there are some Dan DiDio fingerprints on this.
Potentially, but you know the Frank Miller Presents folded. So Frank, you know, Dan DiDio left, but this is, you know, obviously this movie wasn't produced right. last week, right, so it right. might have been produced while they were, you know, doing their Frank Miller Presents, publishing line. So I'm interested, but I'm not going to go to theaters to watch it. I'll watch it when it's on streaming.
Exactly. I, you know, it's not that urgent for me, and I'm not that big of a Frank Miller fan anymore. But I'm curious about it.
Yeah.
And I like the clip of Stan Lee sitting next to him. They're quoting Stan Lee going, you know, your artwork, Frank Miller, is not yet ready for Marvel Comics. You know, kind of like that little snippet they shared. But should be interesting. Should be interesting. Yeah. I mean, he's certainly an influential creator, and I'll be.
There's a lot to talk about. Yeah, I'm curious. Yeah. You know, for what it's worth, I've not really ever gotten they don't owe me an explanation, but I don't feel like I've ever gotten a satisfactory explanation for why his art looks so different now.
Yeah.
It's health related.
I think it's health related.
I think so too, but I don't feel like they've ever been open about that.
But you know what's funny is, you know, he and Jim Starlin both sort of had, you know, health concerns that were impacting their ability to draw. And, you know, Jim Starlin, they were saying, because he had injured his drawing hand. I mean, like significantly, like I blasted a hole through it, you know, and they had, said that he would never draw again. And he really went through some intensive physical therapy, and his art now looks exactly like it did 20 years ago. I mean, it's crazy that he's back and producing comics again. Most all of them crowdfunded. He's doing everything through Kickstarter these days. But it's amazing to me that he's, you know, cranking stuff out when just, you know, a few years ago they said he'd never draw again.
Yeah. So we'll see. You know, like I said, that's one I'll wait for.
Yeah.
It's not the most exciting news that came out this week in regards to movies. But
I was just curious when I saw it. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, for me, the most exciting news that came out for movies this week is that there is a Transformers G.I. Joe crossover movie.
And this is finally that thing that Hasbro's been saying they were – Hasbro, right? They've been saying they're going to do for a long time is to, you know, create crossovers in their toy properties. One of which being Micronauts is, you know, one that they've been talking about that has not happened yet. But it's exciting to see that, Transformers and G.I. Joe are going to cross over.
Yeah, it's one of those things. I love to see that Aaron's love for Micronauts. His hope for the future remains undiminished. You just keep holding on to it, buddy.
I would go watch a Micronauts movie.
Fuck yeah. It'd be the three of us and
I'd see it. It'd be okay, the four of us
and nobody else.
You know, I never thought I would be excited about the idea of a G.I. Joe crossover, but the comics have been so good that it, even though I know the movie would have nothing to do with the creators currently writing the comics and wouldn't be anywhere near as good, I still am more interested in it than I would have been before.
Wayne, why don't you think the comic book creators would be involved?
Because they, well,
you never know.
Yeah, I mean they could be, but they haven't been. None of the comic creators have been involved with any of the movies up to date that for Transformers.
But the fact that they're taking this combination universe, I'm hoping, and I, you know, maybe I'm wrong, maybe Wayne's right on this one, but man, I'm hoping they'll look at the storyline in the Energon universe, maybe get input from those guys, much like Marvel, you know, especially in the early days, got input from creators, and I hope they transport some of what we're seeing in the Energon universe into this new crossover movie.
I mean, I do too, but they did tease it before they had ever brought in Skybound to do the comics.
True. But, you know, that was early days, right? So things could shift, hopefully, especially if the comics are doing well. Do we know who's directing?
I don't think that's been announced yet.
Okay. Not Michael Bay?
Michael Bay is producing it, but Michael Bay has produced every Transformers movie, even the good ones, right? Like the last few, like Rise of the Beasts and Bumblebee, were both pretty good.
Yeah, I like Bumblebee.
And I think if they, you know, if they kept those same character designs and things like that, because then we've got potential here. But they have not announced a director. All they've really announced is that Chris Hemsworth is in talks to star, I'd imagine, as Duke, which, you know, Duke is just such an all-American character, but I guess we get British people to play Superman, so why not Duke? if you've ever seen Chris Hemsworth in Extraction, it's basically the same character, so I think he's got potential here.
I was gonna say, you could take the first Michael Bay Transformers movie, rename that Special Operations Squad, give them G.I. Joe names and character designs, and you'd have a G.I. Joe Transformer crossover.
That's a fair point.
Yeah. Yeah.
It would have been interesting if they would have got Chris Evans to do.
Oh, yeah. They're still up there. There are plenty of characters out there. They can hire all the Chrises.
All the Chrises. Hemsworth, every single Pratt, one of them.
And Evans in the same movie.
Get them all.
Yeah. The real questions we'll need to know still are who's the director? And then who is doing the special effects? Because they lost Industrial Light and, you know, basically they lost their CGI between Bumblebee and Rise of the Beast and had to go with a different studio for CGI. And that's why all the character designs changed.
Okay. Well, we'll see. I mean, I you know me. These are both properties that we've talked how much we love them, you know, in different ways. I mean, Wayne's the Transformers person. You know, Andrew's G.I. Joe. I'm both.
You're bi.
I'm bi. Aaron's Micronauts. He's I'm GoBots. Like, you know, we all have our love.
I like how the Venn diagram of this, you know, there's overlap between three of us, and then Aaron's circle, Micronaut circle, just off on its own. Off
on the side. There.
Aaron's a fan of Mask. You know,
Hasbro bought GoBots at one point, so they're part of the fold of Transformers.
See, the other thing is that we growing up, we had more GoBots in our house than we did Transformers. That's why I never got as much into the Transformers as I did as the GoBots.
You know, we talked about Lee Majors and stuff earlier, and just randomly, you know, I'm looking at 80s cartoons, and, you know, obviously that was my era of cartoons. This is totally off script, by the way. You know, so
I'm seeing this in the outline, Paul.
Yeah, it's on the outline. Yeah. You know, but I think about, like, obviously I was big into G.I. Joe, Transformers, He-Man, Thundercats, Silver. And then I started going down the rabbit hole. I'm like, oh, Silverhawks. And then I remembered for one glorious year, Aaron, my favorite was the Bionic Six.
Oh, yeah.
And which was the cartoon spinoff of the $6 Million Man and the Bionic Woman and the family that they had.
Right.
And they had action figures that were made out of diecast. So they were like 2-pound action figures.
Right.
I
don't think I ever saw that.
I did. I knew it was a thing, but I've never seen it.
Yeah. Huh. It was a short lived thing.
Yeah. It wasn't on long.
Kind of like, you know, all those had like short, like Karate Kid and Mr. T. Like those were all short-lived cartoons, but I remember them fondly.
It was just like I knew of the existence of the Planet of the Apes cartoon, but I only recently watched it on YouTube. So,
well, if we're talking obscure 80s cartoons, was anyone else here a fan of Jason the Wheeled Warriors?
I don't think I've ever heard of that.
That one doesn't ring a bell to me.
It is the most I remember using a tape recorder to tape the like a handheld tape recorder to tape the audio of the show on Saturday mornings and then listening to it throughout the week because I liked it so much. Just listening to the audio.
I used to do that too, to TV shows.
I did that with Monty Python and I did that with Star Trek.
I'll post a link later just so you guys can look at it. You know, I have not found anyone else in my life that is a fan of this cartoon besides me. And most people are like, I don't know what that is.
Yeah.
You know what's ripe for a reboot is Dino Riders.
Yeah. I'd go for that.
Yeah.
Thundar the Barbarian as well.
That's a good one.
I think there should be a live action Thundar the Barbarian movie, to be honest.
I still want a SWAT Cats reboot.
SWAT Cats. That was later. I was a little older for that one. I remember that one.
Well, we're going down the rabbit hole here. But talking about Transformers does.
Well, speaking of barbarians. I'm reading the Conan the Barbarian Blood Serpent book from S.M. Sterling. I think it's the latest in the Conan the Barbarian series. It is really good. I'm only about halfway through.
Are you talking book or are you talking comic book?
Audiobook, actually.
Oh, okay.
But it is really good. It's got a nice blend of sort of, you know, current writing styles versus, you know, Robert E. Howard sort of style. And, you know, we've been talking about Conan the last couple of episodes. And if you're looking for some additional Conan goodness, because, you know, you're waiting for the next issue of Savage Sword of Conan to come out, I recommend picking this one up. And I haven't finished it yet, so I can't speak to the ending, but it is really entertaining and features, you know, one of my favorite Conan characters, Valeria. So good stuff.
You know, since we were talking about Conan recently, I picked up, you know, the first issues of the Titan Comics Conan series. I haven't read either one, but I also Savage Avengers, because I think that was included in Comixology Unlimited, the first trade paperback, because I remember disliking it, but let me dislike it again. because Conan's on my mind, let me just dislike it again. But, you know, since we're talking about barbarians, kind of continuing on the a similar trend, I read an article the other day about that there is a story arc going on in the Wolverine book right now. You know, all the X-Men series are going through the Fall of X saga right now, leading up to From the Ashes. And, you know, I was just going to wait for From the Ashes, but I read that this Wolverine, you know, Wolverine has a big major event going on right now called the Sabretooth War, which they're calling, you know, this isn't the first time I've heard this, but they're calling it the bloodiest, biggest battle between Wolverine and Sabretooth ever. And I was like, you know what? Screw it. I'll give it a shot. You know, and the cover literally says like twice on it. It says the most violent Wolverine story ever told, parental advisory, not for kids. I'm like, they're really pushing this. But you know what? It is probably the bloodiest Wolverine story I've ever read. So the first issue takes place in Wolverine issue 41 and features basically Sabretooth gathering up multiversal Sabretooths, which, you know, not a new story. We've seen this in other stories as well. But he's kind of got this council of Sabretooths from across the, you know, the multiverse. And yeah, obviously it's his latest attempt to take down Wolverine. But in the first issue, spoiler warnings, but it's probably like a 5 month old comic book. The Council of Sabretooths stabs Quentin Quire through the neck and then eats him, and they take Doc in and they chop him into little tiny bits and spell out happy birthday with his body parts at the end of the book. It is such an extreme amount of violence. I was really kind of caught off guard. But I feel like I have to check it out. And now I'm like invested.
Is Dokken dead again?
Dokken's dead again. And Quentin Quire, that was the one that surprised me. Like, I could give a shit about Dokken, but I like Quentin Quire. And when they like, they literally show him, hit him on the floor, eyes open, with the saber tooths tearing at his flesh with their teeth. It is like an Avatar comic level of violence in this book.
Two things. One, the most important question you guys are overlooking is, whose birthday was it?
Oh, it was Wolverine's birthday. Sabretooth's latest attack on Wolverine for his birthday.
And two, don't be too worried about Quentin Quire, because he was featured in an ad in one of our books this week. So obviously, he makes it back alive. At least it looks in the picture. It looks like Quentin Quire. So
because it looks pretty dire for him in this book, I gotta say.
Yeah.
Yeah. It definitely caught me out. It is not a level of violence I'm used to seeing in a Marvel comic, and they weren't kidding. But it's also like, it's so extreme, I feel like I have to read more of it. So that was Wolverine issue 41. If what I'm talking about interests you, I'm obviously a little lost on who some of the villainous characters are. You know, we're at the end of the Krakoa Age, and I really only read like the first 3 months of the Krakoa Age. So I'm very lost on a lot of it. But, you know, I got there's a multiversal Council of Sabretooth and Wolverine. That's kind of what I got out of this.
It's interesting that they're doing that story with multiversal version, because I've been reading Weapon X-Men, which is multiversal Wolverines.
Oh, maybe it's going to be a crossover.
Exactly. Yeah. So I was going to mention this earlier when we talked about the book, but on the inside cover of Bloodhunt Midnight Suns number one, there is an ad for an X-Men number one written by Jed McKay, who I love, with art by Ryan Stegman. And the
who
team
I love they, less.
I like Stegman art. I know you have Stegman issues, but you know, it looks like, according to this picture, it looks like it's Cyclops, Psylocke, Magic, Quentin Quire, Beast. I think that's Leech laying on the ground by his feet. And I don't know if this is actual Juggernaut. It's a guy in black Juggernaut armor. Oh, who is that?
It's actual Juggernaut.
It is actual Juggernaut. Okay.
Yeah. Basically, the new basic X-Men teams, because they're relaunching all of the series. There's going to be three initial X-Men teams. One of them focused on the X-Men as superheroes. One of them focused on the X-Men as, you know, raising the new generation. And then this team is the heavy hitters. Cyclops leading the power team, basically.
The A team, the alpha team, if you will.
Yep. And they're going to be based out of Savage Land.
I'm planning on picking it up. You know, Jed McKay between Taskmaster, Moon Knight, the current Bloodhunt series, I'm excited for. And like, I don't have Paul Stegman issues. So I think for the first time in a long, long time, I think I'm going to start buying X-Men starting in July.
I plan on getting the first issue of all of the three main X-Men relaunch titles. I won't get the first issue of everything they relaunch for all the different teams, but I will give the new team, the new core teams, a try.
Well, you know, of course, I'm going to be interested in the, you know, raising the next generation, because you go back. I love all those, whether it be, you know, Avengers Academy, whether it be, you know, the X-Men, where Wolverine is the headmaster of the Xavier School. I kind of like those young hero stories.
See, for me, the one I'm really interested in is the superhero one, is a team led by Rogue based out of New Orleans.
Yeah. Is Gambit on that team?
Yes.
Okay. Well, maybe I'll get the first issue of each of them as well, and check them both out, all three out. But Midnight Suns, let's talk about that. So there's two, I think, Midnight Suns books that came out this week.
Two Bloodhunt books.
Yeah, sorry, two Bloodhunt books this week. One Midnight Suns, one Black Panther. We're not talking about Black Panther, but I was underwhelmed. Midnight Suns, I think three of us read it, right? Paul, Wayne?
Yes.
What'd you think? What'd you think?
I'll let Wayne go first.
I was so happy because it is Johnny Blaze with the Hellfire shotgun again.
Yep.
With Danny Ketch. Mm-hmm. Danny Ketch's Ghost Rider, Johnny Blaze with the Hellfire shotgun.
Which is kind of funny because, like, over the last 30 years, we've returned to this status quo probably about six times. We move away from it, but clearly this is the right one to be.
Look, this quo is the correct quo, as Wayne was saying.
Exactly. Yes. It is the one that I want, because I love Hellfire Shotgun Johnny Blaze. I prefer him as Hellfire Shotgun instead of Ghost Rider. Yep. And I like Danny Ketch as Ghost Rider. I just, seeing those two together again on the page made me happy. But overall, the whole story I enjoyed. I liked the other characters they've introduced here. You see some of the rest of the original Darkhold team out there with a surprise under their under her control, at least. Yeah. I can't wait to turn the second issue of this.
You know, that one scene where Danny Ketch becomes the Ghost Rider, where he kind of knocks the table out of the way. I got so excited when I hit that panel. Paul, what'd you think?
I thought this book was great. You know, it's, we love the Midnight Suns. We love that, that era of Marvel Comics, and especially the Supernatural Marvel Comics. And they keep revisiting it. We have seen many times over the years a revisiting of Midnight Suns in name, but not necessarily in the right feel or different characters, or, you know, they keep reusing that name, but it hasn't had the right feel. This book absolutely had the right feel. And I like, you know, the only thing that I will say about it is that it's tying to the Bloodhunt crossover in a way that I don't feel is going to be resolved in the context of this miniseries, you know, which is that they're gathering up the Midnight Suns to take down Blade, right? Because Blade has gone evil. But we know that's not going to happen in a side miniseries. Like, that's got to happen in the main Bloodhunt book.
Correct.
But that being said, it's still well written. I really like the art.
Yeah.
On the book, you know, it's subtle in a way, and when Ghost Rider pops up on the page, it's impactful. I really enjoyed this book.
Yeah, I love that they censor Johnny Blaze being flipped off.
Yes. That's what I was going to mention when Tulip goes to flip him off and put the little black bar over her finger.
Yeah.
I love that. And it seems like the artist does a good job because there's a lot of things that happen at night. And a lot of times when you have a lot of things that happen at night, it just seems too dark. The artist does a great job of kind of making it look dark and gloomy and all the outside scenes without making it kind of oppressively dark and hard to see things. So I love the art in this. I also love the Cthulhu monster that shows up in the last third.
Yeah, and how it's destroyed by riding through the truck.
By the demon, yes. But, yeah. You know, Ghost Rider demon just takes it out, which I love. And he's like, get out of the way. No, I'm very excited. I'm definitely, unlike Black Panther, I'm in for the next two issues of Midnight Suns.
Yeah, I agree. It's not going to take us where the premise is set up. I think it'll wrap something else up, but I'm on board the entire way.
Well, you know, we've seen I think twice already where things happen in one of the spinoffs and it does tie into the main book, but not in a way that makes you feel like you miss it. Like, you know, I didn't read that Dracula number one book because they'd sold out, but I'm sure that that tells the story of what happened with Dracula and Blade's daughter from the time that, you know, we leave them at the end of the Free Comic Book Day issue to them showing up in Blood Hunt number two. I'm sure that's covered in Dracula number one, but there was another one someone else had missed where they're like, well, I don't feel like I missed anything. And I feel like maybe some or all of the Midnight Suns might show up, or the Darkhold knowledge they're out there might show up in the main. And if you didn't read the Midnight Suns, you're probably like, oh, that's cool. But if you did, you might have that deeper appreciation or understanding of how that part came about.
Yeah. And regardless, I'm hopefully, as long as it continues this level of quality, it'll be worth the read.
Definitely.
Yeah. Well, Aaron.
Sir.
You had texted us the other day saying Ultimate Spider-Man is so, so good.
It is so
good. And I was like, we have to talk about it because we haven't actually spoken about it, I don't think, since issue two.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to get caught up on three issues of Ultimate Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Same here. I read three issues last night.
I love this book. I think the thing that I find the most remarkable about the Ultimate Spider-Man book, written by Jonathan Hickman and drawn by David Messina, is that Peter Parker, aka Spider-Man, is the least interesting character in the book, in my opinion. I think that the characters surrounding him are much more interesting. In previous issues, it's been J. Jonah Jameson and Ben Parker who have been my favorite characters. And in this issue, issue number five, Harry Osborn is the hero I want to follow. We see his origin story as the Green Goblin in this Ultimate Universe. And I mean, it is complete with Marvel appropriate daddy issues. You know, he is on the phone with his father, and his father is chastising him for being late, but not just being late to the meeting he's supposed to be attending, but being late to being a man, you know, and we're all waiting for you, Harry, to be a man.
Yeah. You know, my favorite memory of you, you haven't made it yet.
Yeah. And I'm waiting on you. And I mean, I thought it was beautifully written. And then the missile hits the building and his dad and his mother and, you know, all these people are dead. And that is his motivation to get his shit together. And I just love this story. And I love how Harry and Gwen are together.
Yeah. Gwen is just badass.
Yeah.
She is like, she's the kind of person that if you were actually sitting across from her in a business meeting, you would be terrified.
Yeah, I love the take on these characters. And again, you know, it feels like Peter Parker is just the instrument through which we're experiencing these characters, that he's not really the center of his own book. You know, I find Peter Parker much less interesting in this book than the rest of the characters around him. I'm digging it. And that's not, I'm not besmirching the book. I'm just like, I love all these characters. And I think they're so dynamic and there's such an interesting take on all of them. You know, in this issue, Harry Osborn goes and meets Kingpin and kind of finds out all the secret, you know, machinations going on behind the scenes. And there's this real Breaking Bad sort of scene between Kingpin and Harry Osborn where, you know, Wilson Fisk is making Harry Osborn say his name, you know, and I really dug the intensity between those two characters. And I have only one complaint about the Kingpin scene in this book. He gets out of the hot tub and he's wearing swim trunks. And I feel like Kingpin would have, you know, done the baller thing of just being commando there in the hot tub. I don't feel like he is a trunks wearing guy in his own hot tub, and everybody else is just going to have to deal with his dork when he comes out of the hot tub. But that bathrobe he puts on after, my God, I need that bathrobe. It's a beautiful bathrobe. I'm just saying.
Yeah, it is interesting. The book is Peter Parker's hero journey, where Harry has already gone through his.
Right.
And we just saw it in flashback.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just such a good book. So, you know, Paul, you got caught up on three issues. Yeah. How did those read together?
They read, you know, the only thing that I'll say is the first four issues, I believe, at least three, are written or drawn by Marco Cecchetto. Mm-hmm. The first three are drawn by Marco Cecchetto. David Messina has done the last two. And the art style is similar but different enough that that reading them in conjunction felt a little jarring to me. Because I have a preference, right? Marco Cecchetto, I find his art much better, but it's not that Messina's bad, it's just different. This book, I'm loving it. I love the character interactions. It's you know, some aspects of the book are so Jonathan Hickman in the super science-y and it's so smartly written from a technical standpoint or technology standpoint, I should say. It's so unusually not Jonathan Hickman in the human interaction.
It's personal. Yeah.
It's so personal in a way that I've not seen from Jonathan Hickman before. And it's so good in that way. I did not know he was capable of that kind of writing. Right. And he's one of my favorite comic writers, but he tends to make high concept.
Right? Yeah. I mean, he's kind of so high concept that, you know, it kind of, cools down the book in terms of a personal story.
Like Ultimate Universe leading into this, right? Yeah. It's much more standard Jonathan Hickman than this is.
Yeah. Well, I mean, issue four, the entire issue is a dinner.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That is, I mean, I am so glad actually that I got behind, because I think four and five read better together.
Agreed.
Because issue four, the entire issue is all dialogue. There is nobody in costume. There is no fighting. It is entirely a dinner and business conversation between Harry and Gwen and Peter and MJ.
Yeah.
And then you get back into things with five and flashbacks and all. But that he could do an entire book that is just a dinner scene is impressive.
You know, it's funny, because I read them all together, I did not realize that entire issue was just the dinner scene. It's, you know, because I read three together and it didn't click like that. Damn, that entire comic was literally one dinner scene. But that's the power of the book, right? If it was so well written, it didn't piss me off that an entire five issue comic book was one dinner scene.
Yeah. Well, you know, if you had, you know, said, hey, Aaron, what would you think about an Ultimate Green Goblin book? I would have said hard no. And now I'm like, I need Harry to have his own book.
I need Harry for sure.
Yeah. I just dig him. And I'm not usually a Norman and Harry guy. I loved this book. I love his origin story. I like his motivation. I love his relationship with Gwen and Gwen's relationship with him. There's just a lot to like here.
Well, and this Harry isn't a drug addict. He doesn't have all the self. He has daddy issues, but he doesn't have the same amount of self-doubt that the regular Harry did. But he does still have darkness, because you have a scene where he's got, you know, got somebody chained up in a chair where he's been working him over to get information.
Yeah. No, I dig it. I dig it a lot. It's so good. So we got a preview copy this week for a book that came out this week. Yes. We got Death Ratioed from AWA Studios, one of my favorite publishers of comics these days. These are the same folks that brought us Ribbon Queen, which was a which I finished this week, by the way. I was like four issues behind and finished it up, and just highly recommend Ribbon Queen. Terrific horror comic. Highly recommend. But Andrew, you read Death Ratioed with me.
I did.
Tell me what you thought.
I love it. I love it for many reasons. The art, I think, is spot on. It suits the story well. They kind of look in the future, 22, 24 years in the future, to this new society where essentially your life is determined by your popularity on social media. So, you have a collar on, and if you get too many dislikes, your head explodes. And this gentleman wakes up from a coma into this new world. So it's kind of a Stranger in a Strange Land story, waking up in this new reality, learning the rules, asking all the questions. And then they also work in this whole Morlock Eloi storyline as well, with these modern day Morlocks down in the basement who can't survive the sewers underground, who can't survive in the modern day society. And the humor I thought was great. I aspire to be more like some of these characters in this book. It was good. what did you think?
Same. I thought the book was great. It's beautifully drawn. Really sets the tone. And that's something that I will say that the AWA books really excel at, is that they are just getting top notch talent to draw their books, and so you do feel like you're in this near future world. Where social media determines how you live, it's the quality of your life, or if you live at all, because if you pull too many dislikes, if you fall out of balance between likes and dislikes, your head explodes.
Hence the name of the book is that ratio. If your dislike to like ratio gets too bad, that becomes your death ratio, and you die automatically. Algorithmically determined death.
And so, you don't have to work if you don't want to work. You can, advertise in your social media, and, the level of likes you get, the level of traffic you get determines, how successful you are in that. And, but there is a subsistence level, right? You just live in a really shitty place and you get really shitty food. Right. Whereas if you're doing better, you get to live better. There is a whole underground, as Andrew was mentioning, that appears in the story about midway through, that is, how do people live outside the system? How do you live outside social media? And at first you're like, okay, well these are going to be the good guys. No.
Well, I don't know if you want to spoil that part, but yeah. In case our listeners want to go and check the book, because I recommend going and buying the book, reading through it. And honestly, even when I was at the story, the cover is great. It just caught my eye, and then I was like, someone mentioned this, and so I'm glad we read it. Did you notice the difference in like the color palette between the modern day story and then the flashbacks to 2022? Yeah. And one of my favorite moments, the very beginning,
salad days of 2022.
Yeah, things were simpler then. When they flash back to this guy and he's planning to propose at dinner at Applebee's, suddenly his collar goes off with a dislike, and the nurse is standing there like, he's like, what's that for? He's like, you were going to propose at an Applebee's. That's what that's for.
Yeah, it's great stuff. Well, and the fact that, people are aware of your ratio when you're out in the world. And if you're near to, having too many dislikes, people will just dislike you more because they want to see your head explode.
Yeah, when you get down to when you only have one dislike left, there's an audible warning that your collar repeats every like 30 seconds.
Yeah.
And this one guy's like, yeah, some people just do it to watch your head explode or to make that annoying sound stop.
It's a good book. It's a good book. Well, this is what I'm curious about. Is this an ongoing series?
No, it's a one shot, but they definitely set it up at the end, though, that if it gets popular enough, I'm sure it will come back. They left it at a spot where the story could certainly continue. Oh, there was one other thing. I think I lost it. Oh, nope, it's gone. So again, I would recommend picking it up, reading it. Same. It's the art's beautiful, story's entertaining, and I think it has potential to see more stories in this future world if it does well enough.
And that's Death Ratioed from AWA Studios. It's a winner from both Andrew and I. We both really enjoyed it, and highly recommend. Highly recommend. Hey, Paul.
Yes, sir.
What's coming out next week?
Well, next week we've got from DC Comics, we have the latest issue of Batman, which is the finale of Dark Prisons, which is the lead up to, or one of the lead ups to the big Absolute Power summer crossover. Also, we have the 20th anniversary deluxe edition of Identity Crisis, in case you wanted a reminder of how old you are.
I love that book.
20 years. From Marvel Comics, we have a couple more Blood Hunt tie-in books, including Wolverine, Blood Hunt number one. We also have the second issue of Get Fury coming. Ooh, which we talked about.
I liked Get Fury. The
first issue. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And we get the final issue of the Krakoa era in X-Men number 700.
Hard pass.
You know, but it finally wrapping up that in time for the From the Ashes. From other publishers, we have Space Ghost issue 2 from Dynamite Comics, which also includes a preview of a new Johnny Quest series.
Ooh,
coming from Dynamite Comics as well.
Ghost number 1.
I did too.
Number 2. Yeah.
We also have Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Alpha, which is the prelude to the upcoming Jason Aaron Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles series coming from IDW. And from Skybound and Image Comics, we get the start of the next chapter of G.I. Joe in Scarlet number 1.
Yes.
Sounds like a big week.
It's a big week. And we've got Acolyte that we're going to be talking about. So lots of stuff.
Very exciting. Very exciting. Well, hey, we want to know what you thought about this week's books. Which toy do you need to show up in the Terminator, G.I. Joe crossover universe? You know, is it a GoBot? Is it a My Little Pony? You never know. Let us know. Give us a shout at ideologyofmadness@gmail.com. And if we use your comments on a future episode, you could win a coveted, valuable Ideology of Madness surprise.
You can also hit us up on social media, IOM Geek on Facebook, Instagram, and X.
And very exciting. I'm looking forward to watching some Godzilla minus one. Not minus one, just Godzilla minus one. I, you know.
Yeah, not that other gem.
Not that other show that I bought by accident. But, whoops. Yeah. But we'll talk all about it next time. Very exciting.
All right. We will see you then.
See you guys.
Bye. Podcast theme music graciously provided by Mark Andrew Pope. For more information, visit markandrewpope.com. Funny Books with Aaron and Polly is a production of ideologyofmadness.com. No Spider-Man clones were harmed in the production of this podcast.